This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hello and welcome to the first Back of the Nest review show of 2020, following last week's festive review. In this episode, we look back at the talking points from the 1-1 draw at home to Arsenal, another game which saw a passive and disjointed opening, ended with the Eagles feeling that it was more 2 points dropped than one gained. We'll look back at the key moments, listener contact, transfers and the VAR protests that are taking shape. We'll be right back after this short message.
Back of the Nest Match Review Podcast. www.backofthenest.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?"
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is... you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Right, time to introduce you to my panel, and it is an old school look today. First of all, I mean, we'll go with Patrick O'Connor first. Hello, Patrick.
Hello, Chris. How are you today?
I'm absolutely marvellous, full of joy. We're recording this earlier than we usually do, so I'm awake and feeling pretty good. And I've barely started drinking the gin that I had near me, so nice and positive. And anyone who listened to last week, there's nobody on the show this week as drunk as Chris Clark was last week. Although I think that would be physically impossible. Anyway, so good to have you on, Patrick. Look forward to your insight. We've also got a returning after what he claims is 18 months. It's Mr. Nick Gillard. Hello, Nick.
Watcher, how's it going?
Yeah, brilliant. Let's have a little catch up.
Well, we've had Brexit. We've had 4 different presenters on Love Sport. I think we've had 3 governments. But we've had the same manager, which when you look at Palace, is extraordinary.
That's absolutely insane. And a very interesting point. Well done, Nick. Good prep. I like it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we won't spend too much longer talking to each other because we've got plenty to get through this week. But a couple of bits of admin for you. First of all, I think from, if I remember rightly, it's from the 19th onward, you'll be getting some daily short podcasts from us around the transfer window. Which should culminate in a live show on transfer deadline day. Back, more old school stuff. We used to do live shows every transfer deadline day. Always very well received to a point, apart from the windows where we did absolutely nothing in terms of transfer business. But hoping for an exciting one this year, and we'll be bringing you plenty of content. Also check out the Back of the Nest YouTube channel where DR's been doing some amazing work. Do subscribe as well. Plenty of stuff on there for you. And watch out for DR's hand movements. Very exciting stuff, really. But also, do remember you can get in touch with us with voice messages using WhatsApp. Chuck the number 0203 575 1266 into your contacts and drop us a message by the pre or subsequent to matches. And we'll use your content on the show or to shape the show. If you're not on any social media where you can follow us or anything like that, remember you can always email hi@backofthenest.com to get in touch, and we'll also use those as well. And finally, if you're whatever podcast app you're listening to us on, please give us a 5-star review on there and help spread the word of our podcast. That's quite enough of that business. So I want to start really, before we get into the meat of the Arsenal game as such, a little bit of a palate cleanser for you, because I want to talk about transfers for a little bit. Just some of the key targets, some of the rumours out. But probably most importantly, I want to talk first of all about a signing that's actually happened. So we've signed Cenk Tosun, on loan from Everton for 6 months. And he had a little bit of a cameo appearance in the Arsenal game. So let's get some general thoughts first of all. I'll start with yourself, Patrick, on the signing in, as a concept, first of all.
I like it. Obviously, we are in desperate need of a goal-scoring striker with Benteke injured and Wickham kind of coming back from injury. So I like the idea. I'm not fussed about what he said previously as far as some comments that he made about Everton being a bigger club. They are a bigger club, so that is what it is. But I just hope that he gets off to a good start. You know, striking is all about having confidence. And if he doesn't get off to a quick start, it could be a problem. But like what he did yesterday, he wasn't on for very long. Came out after Myers' injury. I like his endeavour. I like his movement, his graft, etc. So hopefully he can score. My only issue with that, Chris, is going to be, honestly, I always find that with strikers, they need the service. So hopefully we can tweak what we do and he'll be a success.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, the service is always going to be an issue. We don't create huge numbers of chances. And I know in the past we've talked about the fact that we have created chances, we've just not finished them. But I think, you know, certainly this season, that's less of the case. And you can see that in the sort of statistical analysis that gets done. We're one of, if not the lowest chance creators in the Premier League, which kind of emphasises how great the points total we've got actually is. But I think Tosin hopefully will enable us to perhaps change our approach a little bit and give us a few more options with his mobility.
Yeah, and I think you have to give someone like Jordan Ayew a lot of credit because he's got 6 goals this year. Let's be honest, he probably hasn't had more than 20, 30 chances throughout the whole season. The fact that he scored so many goals is a credit to him. So, you know, again, hopefully Tosin will get off to a good start and he'll get some more goals for us.
Sure. Nick, your general thoughts on Tosin as a signing?
Until we see him a bit, I don't think I can make much of a point, apart from the fact that Everton fans I've spoken to said he's got a really, really good attitude and really gets stuck in all around the club. So that's going to be good. Hopefully he'll keep the team spirit up a bit. But as Patrick said, it's all about the service, innit?
It is absolutely all about the service, innit? So a couple of things I'll mention as well. You know, Patrick, you've hinted at the negative reaction and the comments. I think the club even addressed it in his first interview with Chris Grierson, which I think was good to see that they're addressing the things that he said. And he quite rightly pointed out that, you know, you say those things when you join a club or when, in this case, when he stayed with his team. I think, you know, if we're being sensitive about it, perhaps he could have picked his words a little bit carefully or, you know, given the standard footballer's answer of, well, you know, I don't want to think about what may or may not have happened. I'm here now. I'm playing Champions League football and I'm happy, that kind of thing. But people, in my opinion, are getting over way, way, way too sensitive about some throwaway comments in the press. There's all sorts of stuff you could look at in the past of various people that have been at our club and take offence to. And, you know, I think, you know, comments in the media are fairly low on my priorities of how I judge people. I'll judge Cenk Tosin on how he plays in a Palace shirt and the effort and application that he gives while playing for our team.
It's got to be some sort of record, though, for signing to actually appearing on the pitch for Roy, because normally you have to wait 7 or 8 months before you even see them as a sub. So that's a good sign.
Well, it was interesting that obviously Roy was asked how did he think that he did, and he said rusty, which is with a big smile on his face. So, and I think that was fair to a point, but I like the fact he ran the channels. You know, he's got a little bit of pace about him, even if he is rusty. Not quite as tall as I thought. I think he's at 6 foot at most, which is, you know, taller than me, but, you know, you used to strike as being giants these days. But, you know, seems to have a bit about him. But obviously he's got to play football to ensure that he gets used to how we play and we get used to what he gives us. Otherwise, you know, it'll be a while before he nets and then the pressure will start to build, I think. Also want to point out that, you know, some people have observed the fact that a Greek flag was waved at the game. I scoured the internet to see what that was about. It seems that one person in particular had a political point to make. I'm not going to dwell on it. I personally keep politics way out of football, please, in my opinion. But, you know, everyone's entitled to say and do what they feel, I guess. But I don't think him playing for Palace should really be dragged into that kind of thing. You know, so there'll be people who aren't prepared, you know, to support him from day one because of what was said in the past. That's their prerogative. I hope he changed their minds. For me, as I say, judge him on how he plays and fingers crossed he can get some goals before the end of the season, because you know, when you've got someone else tucking them away, it takes the pressure off others, you know, and it also puts pressure on your opponent to, you know, to keep an eye on him. You know, we'll get to this, but I think if you look at how Arsenal put two or three people on Zaha all the time throughout the game, I think if we've got someone a bit more dangerous out there, I think we can take advantage of that, and it also free Wilf up a little bit. And I think, again, Ayew probably takes a bit of advantage over the attention that Wilf gets as well. Not that Ayew's performances haven't been great, because they have. Anyway, general thoughts on Tosin there. Fingers crossed it goes well. So let's talk about some of the players we've got links in. Mentioned it on a previous show, but we'll go into it in a little bit more detail now, that Roy has confirmed it's something that we're trying to do. And that's Kyle Walker-Peters at Tottenham. Not been getting into the Spurs side. Some injury and, you know, again, some degree of non-selection, shall we say. So clearly that he's a player that Tottenham are willing to lose, be that loan or permanent. And some rumours in the press that the loan fee that's being talked about is too high for us and we'll be looking elsewhere. But a player with a lot of talent, one of a number of, you know, strong English right-backs that are out there at the moment. But I think financially, I think this is probably the sort of better deal that's available for us at the moment. Patrick?
Yeah, based on what I've seen of late, I think we definitely need to get another right-back. I've got no issue with Kelly, but I think he struggled the last three or four matches. I think he's better suited to be a centre-half. Ward still being out, I think that should be a priority. Walker-Peters is a player who I have seen a bit. I remember him a little bit in England youth setup team. He's a decent player. I'm not sure if... I don't think he'd be my number one choice, honestly. I think he's a little suspect defensively. He's young. He can get forward, which is kind of what I like in a right-back, but I don't think he's solid defensively as I would like. But, like I said, the names have been put out there so far. If we can get him on the loan and with a view to signing him, because I'm not really big on just loaning him for the 6 months. We did that with Fosu Mensah. I'm not real big on those short-term types of loans. With fullbacks, especially, even though he's young, I think it would be you know, something we need to address, whether it's him or someone else.
Yeah, I think that the short term part of it is a really good point. Clearly, we need to bring some youth into the squad. We certainly need a long term option, and it, again, about squad strength, isn't it? You know, Roy's talked about only wanting to sign players that will compete for a first team place. You know, Ward needs that competition. He should be back relatively soon, by all accounts. But even when he is back, it doesn't mean we can get away with not signing another fullback, because, you know, we've put ourselves under a tremendous amount of pressure over these last few games. And if you look at the games, you know, there were more points available than we got. We've done very well to get what we had. But obviously, if we'd had perhaps a stronger squad to pick from and not had so many injuries, I think our points total would be better than it is. So. I think an important signing, whether it's Kyle Walker-Peters or somebody else. We'll come to another right-back option or a couple of right-back options in a bit, but a quite surprising development. We talked about Krzysztof Piątek in the last show, but kind of dismissively, and I still feel kind of dismissive about it, but reports in a reputable Polish newspaper that we're close to a £30 million deal for him. I would be stunned if we spend that much money on a striker. I don't know if it's being used to flush out interest elsewhere. I'm not so sure that tends to be the case, but an exciting player. As very, you know, he's young, he's 24 years old, got a good scoring record, struggled a touch at Milan, but not tremendously. And, you know, in terms of minutes, I think he's averaging a goal every three games, even in a time where he's struggling. So don't know if you've got any thoughts or feelings on that, Nick, but certainly an interesting one.
It's interesting that if we're going to be paying out that sort of money, a couple of people on social media have said, well, maybe that's paving the way, you know, we're getting the money if we get rid of Wilf. But we'll talk about that later with Wilf's performance in the game and transfers, I think. But it shows intent, which is good. And it'd be nice to buy a player rather than get on loan with a view to buying later, because we don't want to fall into the trap we did a few years ago with Marco Reich. I don't know if you remember how brilliant he was. And then we signed him and he disappeared and he was absolutely useless. So we don't want him playing well to get a job and then just being crap, which is absolutely a worry.
Yeah, absolutely right. Well, and you know,
hold on.
Go on back.
Reich had one good game.
Against QPR.
Yeah, was it? Yeah, exactly. So.
Well, look, there we go. It's, I understand the cautionary message. I'm not sure we needed to go back that far for the player to reference. But you know, I think whenever we invest large sums of money, it is a huge risk. And you think about two of the most recent large investments in Mama Sakho and Christian Benteke. I mean, Sakho, to start with, has been a brilliant player for us, but injuries have meant we've not really seen enough of him to perhaps justify that transfer fee, maybe, you know, but it was worth the signing. And, you know, certainly when he was on loan was a difference between us going down and staying up. But you can see once we've invested that money, perhaps we haven't got value. And similarly with Benteke, because first season, 17 goals, it looked like money well spent. But obviously the struggles since then really just draw attention to the fact that sometimes, you know, you prefer a £2.5 million Jordan Ayew signing to you know, 28 million on Christian Benteke, wouldn't you? So, but it is a bit potluck, and it's the same for every club out there as well. You can't guarantee anything just because you spent a ton of money. But if we're there, if we have that sort of money, lots of people speculating that it must mean there's a takeover if we've got that sort of money. But well, I don't know, we took 50 million quid for Wan-Bissaka, didn't we? And we've done some deal to get more of that to spend in this transfer window. But to me, that would suggest that's probably all of it, and I think it's unlikely. Moving quickly on, another rumoured signing that sort of popped up over the last 24 hours. Ashley Young was linked with a move to Inter Milan, but we've been linked this morning. Strange one, not a popular player at Palace, but what do we think?
One word, no.
There you go. What's your main reasons for that, Patrick? Are we talking age? Are we talking attitude? Are we talking ability? What do you think?
Yes, yes, and kind of. Don't like. I mean, listen, the history of him is not great. I'm not a fan of him at Manchester United. Obviously, his age is a huge issue. The one thing he would bring would be leadership, which we at times do need. His ability. I mean, he can play left back, right back, but if he comes, I'll support him. But I wouldn't be upset because it's not worth getting upset over, but it would irk me if Ashley Young was signed by Crystal Palace right now. It really would bother me. I wouldn't even see the point, besides the fact we need a, you know, backup left back and a backup right back. I would not like that at all.
Well, Nick, is he a better player at right back than Kelly?
Quite possibly. I'm just really worried about the average age of the squad. And we need to be looking at younger players. I'd take KWP over Ashley Young and play him the other side if needs be. It's just, we were all wrong about Cahill. I don't think any of us said, oh, yeah, let's get him. And actually, we've been really, really surprised at how good he is. So whether Ashley Young would be another Cahill, I don't know. But it's just the age of the squad. And they're all going to get too old at the same time, which will be a really big worry. And then we'd have to blood so many youngsters in at once. It would almost be like playing the under-23s. I don't know. It's, you want to bring the younger players through gradually, but we're not really bringing any through.
Well, no, I mean, that's a challenge for a lot of Premier League clubs, but, you know, especially in our current environment. But we won't dwell on that. We've talked about that before. I'll just throw a couple of things in there with regards to Ashley Young. You know, obviously, it would be a short-term option. We're not massive fans of short-termism, but, you know, experienced Premier League player. But for me, the thing that stuck out in my head when I saw it, because my instant reaction is exactly the same, you know, other than the argument he's potentially a better right back than Martin Kelly is, it just seemed wrong in terms of age and commitment and the fact that, you know, he'd have to do an awful lot to win over majority of the fans because he's not a popular player at Palace. But I'm just going to say the words set piece delivery and move on. So I got Patrick.
You know what? As you said that, I did think that, man, our set piece delivery is so poor and Young's is actually very, very good. But even that doesn't mitigate the fact I wouldn't want to have him here. But I'm thinking out loud and you guys can say, do you remember us getting a player that you really didn't like and then came here and you decided to like? Because I can't think of one really that I really hated and then came to pass and said, you know what? He's not so. I just can't think of one off the top of my head. Do you? Any guys remember anybody really?
I would say not quite when we got him did I not like him, but Shefki Kucci,
okay.
I very quickly turned against with good reason.
You know what? But then, you missed the obvious one, though. Jordan Much.
Oh.
That's the one, right? Never mind.
Well, that's where I've got to be honest, because when we signed him, I did the stupid thing of looking at the videos, and I had this thing where I was like, okay – look at, we've got Fraser Campbell as well. Look at how they linked up for Cardiff. This is a great signing, and it'll take a while to bed in. And I, you know, for the first couple of months, I was like, yeah, he'll be all right. He'll be good. He's just not played enough football. But then, you know, he's now a player who was not good enough for a relegated Korean team who no longer has a club. And yeah, so yeah, we've all been wrong there. I will say, Nick, you're completely wrong about Cahill. I'd never criticise that signing at all. I was quite excited when it happened.
Or me, so, by the way.
To you.
Very quickly, a couple more. Jordan Ibe, just someone we've linked with. A lot of negativity around that for me. Player with a lot of promise in the past. It's always a gamble. You know, is he someone who mentally isn't quite right, and that's why he's not succeeded at Bournemouth? But, you know, Bournemouth's not been the best of places for some other talented players. You know, they've got a very, similar to ourselves, there's a very specific system there. There's, you know, the manager's been around a long, long time, and he's not going to change his methods to accommodate a new player. He's going to get a new player to come and fit into those methods. So, you know, there's a potentially very, very good pacey player there who can give us an option out wide, and we definitely need an option out wide. However, you know, many people are against that one. But I don't think there's any need to sort of go around the table and talk any more about that one. We'll see if it materialises. But, you know, again, young, potentially talented player, I'm all up for that. And Nick, you mentioned Klein was linked again. Obviously, it's relatively well accepted. We looked at Klein in the summer before he got injured for a return. If he is indeed fit and ready to play football, an interesting one. You say never go back sometimes, but very good player, very experienced right back, and would be a good member of the team if he's up to it now.
I'll just say Sean Derry.
Yeah, I say David Hopkin. It, you know, it doesn't always work, does it, when they come back? But sometimes it does.
But, no. It'd be nice to see somebody from our youth system come back and finish their career with us. And he was a quality player. I mean, I still rate him above Wan-Bissaka, sort of over career-wise. Wan-Bissaka, we only saw at Palace for a season. But it was nice to see one of our own go on to better things. And he'll fit straight back into the club because he knows it, which is one good thing. But again, he's not quite as old as Ashley Young. Can he still cut it? Was he any good for Bournemouth when they played against us? I know Wilf made him look very, very silly, didn't he? Once the goal that Wilf scored after the Bournemouth fans accused Wilf of crying, and then he scored that storming goal. I mean, yeah. Wilf left him in his wake. And if you've got players whose names I can't think of, who play for Liverpool, very, very quick, or Sterling, or anybody like that, I mean, he'd have no chance against them, would he?
Anyway, look, we're spending more time on transfers than we meant to, so some quick one-sentence answers for this, for the outs that have been rumoured. Patrick, I'll start with you. Wickham is being linked to Sheffield Wednesday or Bristol City or Forest, but it looks like Sheffield Wednesday are the front runners there. Is that a good move?
I prefer to keep him, if I'm honest. But if he goes out, he goes out.
Got to play some games.
He needs to play. Hopefully he plays some games. But I understand why he'd go out. So.
Okay, and Nick, Benteke links strongly to Villa and some rumour that he was also being offered to Spurs. You think it's a good opportunity potentially to move him on and see if that can resurrect his career?
Yeah, my only bugbear with it is, you know, he'll score a hat full of goals whoever he goes to because they'll adapt their style for him. Again, I'd quite like him to stay with us because although he hasn't been scoring the goals, he's been kind of a glue that holds the front line together a bit when he has been on. But it's just the injuries that we keep getting. It's baffling. So
sure.
Do we want somebody who's going to get injured a lot, or do we try and get somebody in who isn't going to get injured and actually have a bit of stability up there or competition for places? If you're injured, you're not competition.
All right, and obviously Zaha's being linked everywhere. We won't talk about that, but we will talk about Zaha's performance a little bit later on. So it's time for us to move ahead and to talk about the Arsenal game itself. And I'm going to open with a comment from Toby Brody on Twitter, where he said the first 30 minutes was the worst Premier League football I've seen from Palace since we were promoted. However, the second half was some of the best I've ever seen from Palace in the Premier League since we were promoted. What a roller coaster of a game. And there was also a further comment on Twitter that said the game turned after Arsenal didn't give the ball back following a drop ball, which riled up the team and the supporters. And I felt, you know, that's been observed there, that might have been a turning point. And I think that certainly helped up the tempo. But there's some more specific reasons that Roy talked about which turned the game. Before we get into that, it's time for the first time in a long, long time for a Hamblings Ramblings. welcome to Hamblings Ramblings. It's been a while. Not that I haven't had things to ramble about, but, you know, it's, in terms of putting these things together, it can be a bit arduous. So look, we're here. We're Crystal Palace sitting high in the table, a great points total. But of course, there does seem to be one overriding consistency, some overriding slight problem that we have with how we're actually performing. And I'd like to draw some attention to it, if I may. It does seem, perhaps, that Mr. Hodgson thinks that matches only last 45 minutes. And, Roy, they don't. They last a full 90 minutes. And you have to play like that, or potentially, by half-time, the game's gone outside. Everybody's angry. So you have to ask yourself, what would it be like if maybe some football fans took that approach? Maybe we all turn up at half-time and we all or sit there passively for the first half. We don't, you know, we queue loosely for hot dogs. We take our time ordering our pints at the bar. We watch as people move around us and don't react in any way, shape or form. I don't think that would go too well. So you have to wonder, why is it we're quite so passive on the pitch? Of course, you know, it wouldn't be so bad if we potentially tried to match the energy of the opposition. We tried to close down, put them under pressure, put some tackles in. But no, it's the pressure shape. We must return to the pressure shape at all times. The shape rules all. And what do the players do? The players have to play, you know, the way the manager says. But, you know, it's infuriating. As a fan, you feel like you're wasting your money watching the first half. You feel like there's no point because we're not competing. You feel like all we want to do is get in at half-time 0-0 and then perhaps we'll try. And I don't really understand it. What does Roy say in those half-time team talks? When the players walk in, they're 2-0 down, 1-0 down, whatever. Well done, boys. You've done exactly what I said you're going to do. Now the game really starts. You know, you've conserved your energy. You've let them practice. You've let them build confidence. And now we've got to try and fight our way back into the game. And, you know, hey, we do it quite a lot, so you can't criticise too much. But my God, it's infuriating. Imagine what it might be like, what we potentially could achieve if we played for the full 90 minutes of a match. Imagine we had someone in charge who did that, who trusted the players, who trusted the youth, who used the bench. What could we possibly achieve? Oh, there's a possible argument that things might not be better, but you know what? I want to see it. I want to see Palace attack. I want to see them take the game to the opposition. I want to see them not give so much respect to our opponents. Don't treat Norwich like they're Barcelona. Don't watch Arsenal play football all around you. And above all, let's score some goals.
Chris Hambling's gone all ranty. Something's really wound him up. He's using lots of nutty words like bloody cripes and for Pete's sake. It's going to get quite heated. The air is turning blue. The refs are the players are, and guess what, so are you. He'll whine about the tactics, the substitutes and such, but please don't get him started on Jordan Much.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. So there we have it, gentlemen. There's a lovely rambling for you. Quite intense. That's the general idea of them. And not everything I've said is entirely backed up by logic. However, there is a point to be discussed, and I think it's probably the best place to start with the discussion about the Arsenal game. An absolutely terrible opening 30 minutes. I was watching the game at home and gave Sam and her dad my ticket. Well, Sam got Mike's ticket. I gave her dad my ticket for the game due to the early start. I couldn't make it, but so I watched it at home. And it was so, so tough to watch. And the worst thing was that you didn't see us doing anything about it. You just saw Arsenal playing with the kind of freedom and pace that that they do at their best, you know, and they haven't been their best for quite some time. But obviously, you know, anyone who's watched Arsenal this season knows that there's a weakness in that team, certainly at the back. You know, and what you cannot do is let the back line of Arsenal have all the time that they need. You can't just have one player trying to chase down the whole back four. You know, that midfield's got to come up. And interesting to hear Roy Hodgson after the game talk about the fact that it was the players themselves that adjusted on the pitch and how pleased he was. And I think that's something that's long overdue. And I actually said it before it happened. I said, I really, really hope that the players do something about this, because if they carry on sticking to the shape and letting Arsenal play in between the lines, we're going to get an absolute pasting here. And it seems, you know, Roy mentioned MacArthur and McCarthy, who were, you know, were the players who instigated that. But they pushed much higher up, put pressure on Torreira in particular. But Kiarte also moved further out to the right and gave protection down that flank where Kelly was having some trouble. And obviously Mayer was drifting inside as he's inclined to do. So it was very, very difficult to watch in those opening 30 minutes for sure.
Yeah, and that's my frustration. Your ramblings at the end just nailed it. So I'm going to start with three quotes from players and the manager about the first 20, 30 minutes. Gyro mentioned post-match that we lost the ball too quick and we didn't win challenges. Cahill pointed out that we changed the way we pressed and got the press right at the end, which helped to turn things around. And then the manager said, we successfully screened off Lacazette and Ozil off the ball early, but we're not able to stop Luiz, Xhaka or Torreira who ran the match early. And that's the thing. It was so frustrating to watch, Chris and Nick, because we just allowed Arsenal to play in a game where we're playing at home against a team. And you just said, Chris, defensively is very weak. And it was so frustrating to watch. And then, as you said again, then the player decided to change things up. I noticed again, we went from a 4-5-1 to a 4-3-3. We helped IU press. Kouyaté pushed players higher up the field. You know, it was just a different game. We realized what Luiz was trying to do. And we, you know, got him not making those long passes. But why can't we do that from the beginning? I am so sick and tired of us just respecting every single opponent we play instead of going out and saying, you know what, we're at home, we can play, we're a decent side, let's try and play. It's so hard to watch. I don't like to criticize a manager because I actually like Hodgson as a person, I really do. But as a manager, he frustrates me sometimes because I feel like we have to either fall behind and or play for that 0-0 at halftime for us to start playing in the second half. When, like that person who wrote in said, second half was brilliant to watch. It really was. But it's just so frustrating to watch. I mean, we've got to start these games better because we can do better. And that's all I want players to do is just do better. And it frustrates me when we don't.
For sure. And I think when the sort of evidence in front of you, and this is where you struggle, because you can always argue that, you know, Arsenal were a very good team technically. It would be very difficult for us to completely stop them throughout every single game. And of course, every team in every game of football has good spells and bad spells. That's just pretty much how it works. You know, even the very, very best teams have spells and games where, for whatever reason, they struggle. I think, again, if you look at some of the words that Hodgson was using after the game, there's a little bit of an insight in there. And perhaps there's an argument to say that the players needed to do more game management in the past to kind of adjust. Because Roy talked about setting the team up to what you expect against the opposition, and sort of hinted that sometimes what the opposition do surprises you and you need to react. And I think, I don't know if there was perhaps a little window into the discussions that have happened and the sort of analysis that they do at the club, where they have noted that we are slow to react to something that we didn't expect. So you can certainly point to the management team's preparation there, but I say it's very difficult to prepare the team 100% accurately for everything that they're going to face. But where it becomes a problem is, you know, we as supporters often see it very, very simply, you know, in terms of attack and defence. So when we see the team play more on the front foot and attack and actually have a proper impact on the game, like we did against Arsenal, the second we got our confidence up, restricted them and started playing some football, we were the better side. There's no doubt whatsoever about that. Even before the red card, we were the better team. You know, they creaked and they lost confidence. And you just think, well, if you started a game like that, imagine what you could potentially achieve. And there's no way you can not think that. Even if the answer in reality might have been, if we started the game like that, they might have caught us on the break three times and we might be 3-0 down at half time. We can't possibly ever know that. But what appears to be the evidence in front of our eyes would suggest we are better trying to take control of these games.
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head, especially against Arsenal, when they're nervy. They are you know, they're not having a very good season, and you do want to put the willies up them. It was difficult for Kelly at the start because Aubameyang was out wide on the Arsenal left, and Kelly was so far in field, and Maya not back supporting him. So that was frustrating to watch. But if we start like that next week against Man City, we're going to get absolutely mullered. And we've only done well against Man City when we try and take the game to them. So it's going to be a tricky one to balance. I'm not sure how much having Luka out would have affected our confidence at the beginning. But look at last week's game against Derby, where I thought we were going to absolutely muller them because of the way we started in the first 10 minutes. Pierrick was the one that was actually seemed to give the rest of the team confidence with his little runs and his own confidence on the ball. We need somebody to pick up the game from the start and say, come on then, let's go. The fact that Tompkins was captain, I don't know whether he G'd up the rest of the team enough. I was surprised it wasn't Cahill as captain, but we just seemed a little bit unsure, and it was like a knife through butter, Arsenal getting through to us. The longer we played like that, the more confident Arsenal seemed to get. And it wasn't until somebody said that drop ball and we actually started getting angry and fed up that we actually showed a little bit of passion and were less passive.
Mm. Well, it's that overused word, and I use it too much as well, but intensity. You know, you want your team at the very least to sort of match the intensity of the opposition. And sometimes when you're a very organised, structured team, that kind of goes out the window. But look, I think we've touched on the key points there of what we're talking about over, you know, a number of games rather than this specific game. But I think this highlighted it quite intensely, if I might use that word again, because, you know, again, it was like a microcosm of the season in that respect. I was encouraged at the way we came back into it, though, so I don't want to dwell on the negative of that. I think, you know, is it potentially you're talking about a turning point in the game. You might be talking about a turning point in the season where the players, you know, really realise the impact of what they do on the pitch and getting together and actually reacting to what's going on in front of them. I'm not saying they haven't tried to do that in the past, but it was decisive. They recognised what the problem was and they dealt with it. And I did like to see that. So a lot of encouragement there. And I guess the other point to make really in defence of the management team is perhaps we've got to focus a little bit more on giving Roy the players that will give him confidence to do that more. You know, Roy has plenty of times in the past has talked about loving the sort of the attacking move and movement of football, you know, and he called it balletic in one particular quote I saw earlier on. So he clearly loves that side of the game, but I don't believe he currently has the belief and confidence in the players to play that way. He has absolute belief and confidence in the players to play a kind of structured, organised, and at some points, relatively cynical style of football. So we've perhaps got to back him enough for him to believe that there is a different way of playing, and that, you know, with the right people in the right places, the squad are capable of much more. Because, you know, we're in a really good position, but the second half of the season, if we can just turn that dial up and start trying to dominate games, you know, we could do really, really well here. And on the flip side, if we don't, we're not that far away from the relegation zone. We've got some tough games coming up. You know, I looked at the fixtures the other day and I think you look at the next 8 games, part of me thinks we've really got to get to 40 points in the next 8 games. Otherwise, we could have a really nervous end to the season. And I don't want to be thinking that way. I want to be thinking much brighter and more cheerful than that.
We're getting a reputation for being very, very slow starters. So it will take a team by surprise if we do come out of the blocks really quickly. They won't be expecting it at all. And we could use that to our advantage.
Absolutely right. So look, this is a little bit of a nod towards the lineup. Obviously, Guaita came back in after the cup game. You know, Tompkins and Cahill are centre backs, Kelly right back, Riedewald left back, and we'll talk about Gyro in a little bit. Mayer again starting it, let's face it, out of position on the right hand side. Coyote, MacArthur, and McCarthy in the centre in the absence of Luka, with Zaha on the left and Jordan Ayew leading the line. Still a bit of a young looking bench, which, you know, really does point to the fact that we are struggling for fully fit players, with Pierrick, Kirby, and Woods on the bench. Unfortunately, none of them got on for some minutes, which is a bit of a shame. Also, Wickham and Tosin on the bench with Hennessy and Dan as well. Tosin, the only substitute used in there, which perhaps, again, is a little bit disappointing in some senses. You kind of think once the once the sending off happens, you know, obviously we brought Tosin on for Mayer, which you could argue is a pretty good attacking substitution, but at the same time, we didn't change the system. We didn't try and get an extra man further forward, and we didn't try and do that at any other point. So as much as it was a strong performance to finish the game, and perhaps we should have won, you know, again, maybe a change there, maybe chucking on Pjerić, maybe chucking on Wickham as well and going 4-4-2. I'm not sure. Maybe there's something that could have been done there. So again, perhaps something to look at the management team and ask why we're not taking those risks. But I suppose on the flip side, we could have lost the game as well. So before we start talking a bit about getting into the goals and some of the sort of tactical stuff, I want to talk, Patrick, about something. I'm not sure if that's you that's raised that or Nick, but it's certainly something that I wanted to talk about, the cynicism of Arsenal and the way they played the game. Very early on, there was a lot of failing injury, Kolasinac in particular, rolling around for no good reason. But lots of sort of late challenges, lots of niggly fouls, and a huge amount of time wasting towards the end. I was sort of a bit disappointed in them in some respects.
Yeah, that's Arsenal. it is disappointing, but to me, that's Arsenal. I've tweeted out yesterday, I have not seen as bad an Arsenal team since the 1980s. They have come a long way, and it's just why I was disappointed in only getting 2 points off of them this season. But the cynicism isn't right. It was throughout the match. I've seen it from them before against us. It's frustrating to see. It comes from their fan base also. I mean, the fact that a lot of them had the nerve to actually complain about the red card. If you watch it just one time, I've only watched it once. I can't tell my head. It's all awful to look at. With thank God he didn't break his ankle with Maya. But and then the Louise at the end with the time wasting. People, I mean, they're just, and then they got fouled. They're falling on the floor, not getting up because they have 10 men. It was awful to watch. I mean, again, you turn that around, you make that us, and we're the worst club in the league. Get Palace out of the league, etc., etc. It was awful to watch. I mean, it really is amazing. A club with such a reputation, with a really big club in England, has to resort to that against us. It was awful to watch. I hated to watch it. I really did.
There was one moment I think Arsenal deserved to kind of stop play a bit, and that was when two of their players clashed heads in their own penalty area. That was the only time. The other time it was just time wasting. As a paying punter, you don't want to see that. And do the Arsenal fans want to see that? Really? And it's not a very good advert for English football. It was the guy who picked up the ball and carried it, and nothing happened. Why aren't the refs stamping down on that? Why, you know, when Aubameyang was sent off, players were crowding around him. A couple of players had their hands all over him. Isn't that a bookable offence? So a lot of that is down to the officials as well, not actually stamping their own authority on the game.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it was Louise who did that. And it was interesting, once the ruck started, that he ran away as well, which I think probably sums him up. but Roy picked up after the game as well. He said that early on, Pepe got away with a bit of stamp on MacArthur as well, which he did. You know, he left his foot in quite nastily as well. You don't really like to see it. You'd sort of prefer... Again, you know, Arsenal teams of old, it was all about football, wasn't it? But you've got to have that edge. And, I suppose at times we like people having, you know, our players having that edge. And at times it's been missing for us. And a bit of criticism has come the way of the team, you know, not necessarily going straight in for the tackles and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it is part of the game, but it was really hard to watch. I can't blame them. It's just weird to see an Arsenal team killing so much time. If you added up the time for their throw-ins, I reckon it was about 15 minutes added on time for just how long they were taking over them. You know, the whole thing of walking up the line, the referee sending them back and then taking one step back, it was just awful to watch. But there you go, I suppose in a weird way you can kind of take it as a compliment. I won't spend too much more time talking through the game. We do have to cover the goals and a couple more clear incidents as well. I was going to talk a little bit about the sort of average positions again, but I'll just really highlight one thing that Reader Vowed was quite well pushed up, which allowed Wilf to get up. But I think one of the things that the sort of average positions of the team show that Wilf was very isolated out on the Palace left for large parts of the game. You know, Ayew had sort of drifted more over to the right of the pitch, and the midfield weren't getting that far forward to support him. So, you know, we'll talk about his performance and what people have read into it. But I think, you know, for me, the key thing to sort of note from our positions is that, you know, we made it quite easy for Arsenal to be able to sort of double and triple up on Wilf and prevent us getting the ball to him, which I found disappointing.
Yeah, and with this Wolf thing, that every time, you know, transfer comes around, you know, people talk about he got a new agent, he wants to leave, he's got a bad attitude. If people watch the games or watch what happens to him when they play, he gets triple teamed, Chris, you said it, every time he gets the ball, every single time. What do you want him to do? Exactly. Yeah, we know he can get out of that. We've seen it before. But people don't, if you watch the matches, it amuses me every time he gets the ball, I see a player come and then a third player come to mark him. So he's either got, you know, and people want to criticize his performances. It frustrates me. It really does. Because if you watch the matches, when he ever does anything at all, it's amazing. Because he's so marked out of the game every time. Because teams know our best players, Wolf Zaha. Stop Wolf Zaha, you stop Crystal Palace.
He seemed very reticent to take people on in that first half. Was that just me, or did you both notice that as well? Normally he'd get the ball and he'd go for a run, but every time he got it, he just played it back to Gyro.
I think people have picked up on that, and I'll just say a couple of things about it, you know, seeing as we're talking about it now. I think people think that, a happy and motivated and informed Wilfried Zaha is going to beat three players every time he gets the ball. And, you know, he's kind of made that rod for his own back in a sense, but, you know, teams play him differently than they used to. So we can't expect the performance every week from Wilf of taking on three people and beating them every time. You know, the key thing that every manager says when talking about Wilfried Zaha playing for Palace is that you can't let him get one-on-ones. And Arsenal didn't. So when you say he didn't take players on, you're absolutely right, because Arsenal were very well structured to stop it being a one-on-one scenario. So, you know, he was looking at the game and thinking, well, you know, for me to take the player on, I've got to actually take on two or three players. So probably the chances are I'm not going to beat them, because the chances are you're not going to beat three players every time. So the better thing to do is retain possession, because we're giving it away a lot. So I'd say that's one big factor. You know, I will completely acknowledge that I think he was below par. I think he got frustrated. I've heard some suggestions that he responded badly to some shouts from the main stand as well. So, you know, I do think there was something more in that game that was affecting him being at his best. But like Patrick is suggesting, I think sometimes you actually have to watch the game and watch what's happening to really understand. And, you know, that expectation of Wilf will always be there from Palace fans. And sometimes, through no fault of anyone's, he's not going to be able to meet that expectation.
Completely agree, but he just didn't seem to want to. And what didn't help and has been a problem for us, looking at us and looking at other teams we've played against, is other players' movement off the ball. And you talked about Roy wanting the rigid formation, but we just don't seem to offer those options. So when Wilf was playing the ball back to Gyro, Wilf wasn't able to get forward because there wasn't a ball for Gyro to play to somebody else to play back to Wilf, if that makes sense. So we just seemed a bit too static. And if we can move more than we have been, then that will free up Wilf a bit more. But yesterday, the tactic of give the ball to Wilf and hope for the best just wasn't going to work, because Wilf had a bad day at the office, which, you know, we're not going to say he's got to be brilliant every week, but it just kind of exposes us as to how one-dimensional we can be if he's not on his game.
Yeah, you've touched on a really good point around passing options that I was talking about on Twitter yesterday with a few people. And I think that's, again, something that we sometimes forget. We, you know, a lot of people will very quickly look at the performance in the first 30 minutes and quite rightly say, oh, God, our passing's not great. We're giving the ball away so much. But, you know, I'm not teaching people to suck eggs, but obviously it does take two people to make a pass. You know, the person who's in possession of the ball needs options. And I think no one suffered more than Gyro Riedewald at times, because, you know, a tremendous performance from Gyro, which we'll talk about in a bit. But, you know, very early on, you know, and I talked off the game about, I think, you know, if he sharpened up just a touch, he'd be incredible. But early on, a lot of the passes that he wanted to make when he had possession, and he's so calm in possession, but he looked up and there was nothing there. So he was trying to make these sort of flicked, intricate passes, just giving the ball away a lot. And that happened all across the pitch. But because people, it's very difficult when you are focusing so much out of possession into the structure and the setup. It's very difficult to suddenly break and be able to offer the person in possession loads of options to pass when your opponent is pressing you. And that's where we really do struggle. If we're pressed and we're not having a lot of the ball, it's very, very difficult for us to make our passes, and people get frustrated and the team get frustrated, the fans get frustrated, and it really does seem very disjointed. And, you know, again, credit to the team in this particular game for turning that around and suddenly, you know, pressing Arsenal and opening up more options for passes, because it made us so much of a better team.
I get the impression that we're not doing any two-touch training games. Do you know what I mean? Where you got to trap and pass. We seem to have lost the ability to do that. And, you know, having seen lots of kids' football and kids' football training, that's what they really drill in, and that's how they get the movement. I don't think we're doing that in training, are we? Hopefully we will be, but just that pass and move, it's just not happening. And for a top-level team, that's poor.
I want to add... Nick and Chris, because you make good points there about Gyro and the whole training thing, Nick. But I having Gyro behind Wolf is different, because he had PVA behind him before, and Gyro is a much better passer than PVA is or probably will ever be. And I did notice he mentioned in the post-match also, he was able to put some passes forward for both Jordan and Wolf to run onto. So that might actually have been a tactic for us to go back to Gyro, so Gyro could look for a way of the eye you making runs up front. Because Gyro, if you notice, Chris points out, is an excellent passer. So that might have been a tactical thing yesterday.
For sure. All right, so very quickly, let's talk about the goals. I don't know if we want too much discussion in it, but so obviously we've talked about how Palace very early on couldn't get near the ball, and you just kind of knew it was coming. So, you know, the midfield is very much standing off and really exposed in the goal, because, you know, David Luiz was allowed to sort of stroll out from the back line into midfield, no one closing him down, no one looking for him to, you know, to put him under any pressure at all. And he was just allowed that freedom of the pitch to pick out the pass to Ozil. We were trying to get tight on Ozil, but, you know, he's got the quality to play a one-touch pass like he did into Lacazette. And his time through ball was excellent into the run of Aubameyang. And obviously we talked about Kelly. He was unable to track the run of Aubameyang. You know, he kind of got caught between the fact that Aubameyang was playing out wide and the fact that he was moving to an area where you'd expect Tompkins to pick it up. But of course, Tompkins and Cahill at the time had gone to meet Ozil and Lacazette. So it was just, it looked an easy goal. You can see how it came about, and you can see how it was probably very difficult to stop. But the mistakes came long before that final pass. The mistakes came in letting Arsenal just play how they wanted to play in a confident manner. Very easy finish for a man who scores lots of goals. And, you know, it looked bad for us at the moment at that time. But moving on to our goal, once we'd got back into the game, and we had early in the second half, free kick out on the right-hand side. And McCarthy, not great from his delivery all game, let's just say that. But this time he actually, you know, they expected a long ball into the box. All the defenders had gone up and Coyote had gone into the middle and they're all waiting for that. But Mayer's completely free down the line and, you know, good vision from McCarthy to pick him out. Mayer's got time to pick out a cross, and it's an interesting cross because he doesn't sort of whip it in for the big men in the box. Plays it low, not particularly hard either, and Coyote's anticipated brilliantly, picked it up, and rather than kind of do the thing that you would expect him to do, was probably swing a leg and try and smack it into the goal, because it probably would have been blocked. Knocks it to the Ghanaian Messi, and I've put in my notes, should he actually be the Ghanaian Pele, given that his dad is a Bide Pele? Not sure. I'll have a think about that, but... Yeah, a bit of fortune with the shot in a way, but you know, if you take the shot, you got a chance of scoring, and he did. And you got to say, hugely deserved at that moment. The increase in quality, the increase in effort from Palace, absolutely richly deserved. So those are the two goals for you there. And Patrick, you popped in some Jordan Ayew statistics.
Yeah, this first one's for Nick. He's the first Palace player to score home and away versus Arsenal since 1972, and that player's name was John Craven. Have you seen him play live, Nick? I have.
I don't remember John Craven playing, really. I first went in 76, but I was going around saying, yeah, that's the first time a Palace player has ever scored home and away against Arsenal, forgetting that the whole of the media just forgets that the Premier, you know, football existed before the Premier League. And I was surprised. Premier League 1992, we're nearly 30 years into it. It's madness, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm assuming it's not the same John Craven that presented news round.
No.
I deliberately didn't say that, Chris.
I know.
Deliberately didn't.
And I was annoyed you didn't.
And then the other stat, which is interesting, is that Jordan Ayew has actually got 21 of his 22 Premier League goals in the second half. The only goals they've scored in the first half was this year versus Man United. So
there you go.
He's a clutch player. As you said, he is definitely the Ghanaian Pele. Not the Ghanaian Messi, as his dad's name was, Abidi Pele.
If we get better in the second half, imagine how good we'd be if we were half decent in the first half. Because most of our goals are second half. How many have we scored in the first half? Not many.
No, it's not at all. And from open play, I think it's even less. So but there you go. That's plenty to work on there. So we've got to talk about Vicente Guaita's save at the end from Pepe. At first glance, you don't even see the touch, but I think there's a great angle from behind the post of what a phenomenal save that is. And let's not forget there was a follow-up save as well. The ball's come back off the post, actually hit him, but he's managed to react as it was hitting him in the sort of arm slash head and get down to pick it up at Lacazette's feet as well. Just what a goalkeeper, Patrick.
I don't know what to say. I am so thrilled to have this man in the net. And you know, in my history of our goalkeepers in the past, loving Julian, not loving the guy after came after Julian, but he's been absolutely fantastic. And that save, Chris, is brilliant. It's going to be the save I remember most by him in his past career, unless he does something more spectacular. But the Pepe part is brilliant, and you're right, you don't even know he does that. So, but the save at Lacazette's feet from that close to react, because the thing about him, he has tremendous reactionary skills, which is you need as a goalkeeper. His reactions are brilliant. A lovely save that he makes is because he's so, I'm going to use that stupid cliche, he's cat-like. And that save was so brilliant. And again, we've talked about Chris in the past. He has earned us so many points that people just don't realize. Take it for granted. And that's what you need to be a ninth place team when we're, you know, we scored X, you know, whatever, 20-something goals all year, 20 goals, I believe, this year. He's been absolutely brilliant. I actually love Vicente Guaita.
The unflinching bravery of that second of the two saves there was unbelievable. What's really pleased me over the weekend and the last week is he's been, you know, he's good because he's been linked to other teams, Man City, for instance. But despite all that, he has said that he is really happy in South London. And it wouldn't surprise me to see him with us for a fair few seasons. I think he gets us. I really do.
And he actually said, you know, a lot more years would be good, which I'm taking to mean that he wants to stay with us forever, and he's more than welcome to. And I want to talk about him just a little bit in terms of comparison to other goalkeepers. Lots of people talking in some superlative terms. You know, Julian Speroni is a club legend, but to me, he's like, I hate to say upgrade on Julian, but I guess he probably is in terms of the fact that we're talking about playing at a higher level than Julian spent most of his career with Palace. I don't mean that disrespectfully. I just mean certainly that he has that same sort of, you know, the strength he has is in shot stopping and reacting, you know, but he has got that added aerial prowess as well. You know, he's a really good all-round keeper, and I suppose probably more relevant to the modern game. He's also very, very comfortable receiving the ball at his feet and generally makes the right decisions in whether to punt it out of play or knock it up the pitch or play it short. You know, just everything that he does is incredibly high quality and shows the intelligence that he has as a footballer as well. So, brilliant keeper.
And what a difference that makes to the back four when they are comfortable passing back to him. You know, you wouldn't see them playing along the back four and then thinking, oh, let's pass it back to the hen. I will say that Vicente is our best keeper since Nigel Martin, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Yeah, I can't argue that. And the last thing I say is that people know but may not realise. Think about the back four he's played with this year. It must have changed 10 to 12 times, the back four. Yet, he still performed really well, which is, again, credit to, obviously, to the back four deserves a credit, but he deserves a lot of credit for the fact he's done well, despite the fact that his people in front of him have been different each time. Well, not each time, but a lot of the time.
Yeah, for sure. No, we're running a little bit long here. So, the red card, I'll just say my bit, and we'll move on to discuss the last points of the match. Clearly a red card. Bizarre that people are questioning it. You know, and the people who are questioning it are obviously they're Arsenal fans plus Danny Murphy, really. And the consensus seems to be he's not that type of player. It wasn't intentional. Doesn't matter. Still a red card, isn't it? You know, and it's worse than a lot of tackles that we've seen not punished quite as severely as well. I think it's a terrible forwards challenge. It's really harsh on Max Meyer, who was really growing into that game, and who desperately needs a run of games in the side to see if he, you know, he can reach the levels that we want to see from him and expect to see from him. But, you know, obviously the hugely annoying part was just how long it took to actually make the decision. We'll talk about VAR towards the end of the show in a few moments, but just took way, way, way too long to deal with it. But so moving on from that, I got the question in there, did we miss Luca? We sort of touched on it. I think we did. We did miss his organisation. And the fact that he generally does the screening job on his own when we started the game with two players doing that job. So I think that did affect us and the way we started the game. We'll see how it pans out in the next two games. But I think, you know, those people who were seemingly delighted that we've, you know, that Luca's out for three games, I think we'll probably not be so happy come the end of those three games, in my opinion. We've got plenty of performances I wanted to discuss. We've talked Zaha. We won't get into time to talk about Mayer and McCarthy in any more detail than we have. Jordan Ayew's had lots of attention. Tremendous game from him. But let's talk very, very briefly, gents, about Jairo Riedewald. Roy, very interestingly, talking after the game, saying he'd asked him if he'd, you know, a while ago, if he wanted to play left back, and Jairo had suggested he didn't feel that that was a job that he could do. I assume that he meant he could do on a regular basis because, you know, he has played there before. But it's like a new signing at left back, and people quite rightly saying, well, does PVA get back in the team? Because, you know, we're looking at a player who is so much, now he's up to speed. He's got pace. His calmness on the ball is fantastic. His range of passing is brilliant. His skill, you know, the little drag away and spin when under pressure during the game was absolutely superb. It's starting to lift people. They're seeing, you know, something that we've been waiting for over a couple, you know, more than 2 years. You know, that player to get the opportunity and for him to take that opportunity. Roy seemed delighted that he had done, which is a great thing to see as well. Lots of talk about how his professionalism when not in the team has been, you know, second to none. And potentially, you know, throughout the rest of this season, we could see him emerge as a real Palace hero and you know, a player to stick around longer.
Yeah, it's frustrating for me that he didn't get a chance before, because if you think about it, against the Man City a season and a half ago, he actually played very well. And that's been my frustration with Hodgson for quite a bit, is that it's taken, again, an injury to a fullback to decide to put someone else in there and then realize, oh, wow, he actually can play. And that's, you know, that's why I think our squad is underused and underutilized. And it's a shame, but I've actually loved him. I love his attitude. If you listen to his interviews, and I've done it quite a bit, he's very, very quiet. He's like a really just quiet, shy person. But again, as you said, Chris, he's never let himself down in training, according to the manager. He's just tried to do what he can. I am sure left back is not his preferred position, but I'll tell you right now, I wouldn't mind seeing him there for the rest of the season, because I absolutely love his composure on the ball. He's an Ajax-bred player. You can tell the passing, the skill level is there. And I'm just so very happy for him. I just wish that players like him, whether they be younger or wherever in our squad, would get a chance, because you give them the chance, I think they can perform if you give them the confidence also. So good for Jairo. Man of the match.
Yeah, you kind of made the Ajax point that I was going to make there. He was part of a very good Ajax team. I'm not sure I'd keep him at left back, although there was a clip I saw on Twitter of him stopping a player dead in his tracks, taking the ball, doing a roulette and then releasing the ball. If we could have him in a different position doing that, with PVA going back to that left back position, yeah, I don't think left back is going to be his best position. I wouldn't play him there.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's certainly regarded as a central midfielder. And, you know, with injuries as they are and form as they are, and, you know, McCarthy being linked with a move back north, that kind of stuff, there could be opportunities there for him as well. And it'd be interesting to see if he takes those. But very, very welcome to see a player sort of emerge from nowhere and perform to that level. And you just love to see it, don't you?
Anyway, it's like a new signing.
Yeah, absolutely right. Well, that'll do for the discussion for the game. We're going to have a little bit of an interlude now, a little bit of levity from all the kind of detailed tactical analysis and discussions of that. We're going to play a little game. So it's going to be Patrick versus Nick. I'm calling it Who Said This? There's probably a better, more witty title than that. So in our most recent Premier League era, Palace have been managed by the following managers: Ian Holloway, Tony Pulis, Neil Warnock, Alan Pardew, Sam Allardyce, Frank de Boer, Roy Hodgson. So in the following quiz, you're going to be given a quotation, and it's not necessarily from their time at Palace, and there's going to be a choice of four managers that this might be from, as I ask you, who said this? It's not whom, is it? It's who, right? Anyway, not to worry. So,
answers on a postcard.
You're teaching it. Come on, mate. Actually, you're both teachers. Sort it.
I teach math.
We're going to let you struggle.
No one knows what to think. So anyway, you guys ready? I'm going to line up the first quote for you right now. So I'm going to give you the quote, and then I'm going to give you the four choices, and I'm going to start. I mean, I suppose there's a potential advantage to starting, but we'll alternate who gets to answer first. And Patrick, I'm going to start with you for the first one. So you're going to give the first answer. Nick will give his, and I'll tell you if you're right, a point for a right answer, nothing for a wrong answer, obviously. We'll see who wins at the end. Quote number one. The quote is, and I'm not going to do any actions, you'll be pleased to know, because it will give the answer away. It'll give the answer away as well if I do try and do the actions. Well, I could do the different accent than the actual answer. Anyway, no.
You haven't. The only reason you can't do the accent is you haven't got Dougie on that list, and that was the only one you could do properly, really, truth be told.
There'll be accents coming up, I'm telling you. I'm trying to inject a bit more fun into this show over the next few months. And that's almost certainly going to include terrible impressions of Palace personalities. Right, quote number one. I've got nothing against foreign managers. They're very nice people, apart from Arsene Wenger. So your choices are Sam Allardyce, Frank de Boer, Ian Holloway, Tony Pulis. Patrick, what's your answer?
Sam Allardyce.
You've gone with Sam Allardyce. Nicholas?
Well, it's not going to be Frank de Boer, is it? He's not going to say he's like foreign manager.
Good one, Nick. Thought of that one.
I'm going to go, just to be different, I'm going to go with Ian Holloway.
Okay, well, you're both incorrect. The answer is Tony Pulis.
I never liked him, by
zero,
the way.
0-0. Well, there you go. Some of these quotes are quite functional. Some of them are breathtaking. And this very much comes into the second category. So quote number two. I squeezed into some very tight black pants and nailed the moonwalk. I've even dressed up as Cheryl Cole. So your options are Neil Warnock, Sam Allardyce, Ian Holloway, and Roy Hodgson. And Nick, you go first this time.
I'd love it to be Roy Hodgson, but it's not. I'm going to go with Ian Holloway again. Maybe if I say Ian Holloway every time, one of them will be right. No, I'll go with Ian.
All right, Patrick.
I thought that to be different. No, I'm going to go with Neil Warnock.
Oh, wow, that's a hell of an image. But the answer is nil-nil still, because the answer is actually Sam Allardyce, and that is a picture. Just go through that quote again. I squeezed into some very tight black pants and nailed the moonwalk. I've even dressed up as Cheryl Cole. Sam Allardyce said that. There you go. Right, so we're poised at nil-nil here. Okay, so quote number three. If you don't want to struggle against relegation, the home games are very important. We have to get more points in Selhurst Park with the fanatic fans behind us. It's possible. And your choices are Sam Allardyce, Tony Pulis, Frank de Boer, and Roy Hodgson.
Okay, so Patrick, it's my turn. This is the funny part about that quote, right? Three of them were managers when we were in relegation, obviously. So I'm limiting De Boer, obviously. He wasn't around. So I've got three choices. So I could just pick one of three because anyone could have said it. I'm going to go with Pulis.
I'm going with Pulis. Yeah. So what are your thoughts then, Nick?
That's who I was going to go for as well. But just to make it competitive, right, I'm actually going to say Frank de Boer.
Well, we do have a correct answer.
De Boer, isn't it?
And it's Frank de Boer.
Yes.
You know what? That is an excellent question, by the way, because my logic makes sense. But you know what? You threw that in there. And it's brilliant, Chris. Well played. Well played, Nick.
I did pick that one to give a little. That was my one that would be a challenge. And I have to say, it came in pre-season.
I was going to say, so you think about relegation movie. That's why I didn't like that guy either, by the way.
There you go. 1-0 to Nick after, that's after three quotes, right?
Before you move on, what do we win?
Yeah, I'll come back to you.
All right.
A goodbye mug. You can join the queue of people I haven't sent that to. It's been 4 years, I think.
Four years. Yeah. I've been on the show since then.
Right, so quote number four. After the game, we're walking off the pitch. We've just won 2-1. The ref's given us a goal that was blatantly offside, so I'm absolutely elated. Neil Warnock, the Sheffield United manager, is going ballistic. Anyhow, I'm shouting at Neil as we walk off. I've always supported you, but now I see I was wrong. Everybody else in football is right. You're a twat. So the choices you have there are Sam Allardyce, Tony Pulis, Ian Holloway, and Alan Pardew.
My turn, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with Pards.
I was two, so I won't, obviously, because I can't come back if I pick the same person. So who are the other three choices? I'm sorry, you said Pardew.
Allardyce, Pulis, and Holloway.
Oh, Pulis again.
Both incorrect. It was Ian Holloway.
he called him a twat. Did he really?
Yeah, he called him a Warlock a twat. Yeah.
I love that again. I don't care about the score. I just love the quote. Seriously, they're brilliant. They really are good. This is awesome game. Keep going, please.
I want to see them on a panel show together now after hearing that. You know, exactly. An evening with.
There you go. Nice short quote for number five. I think increasingly people would define success as staying in the league, being a stable Premier League club that treats its fans to good football every year. So your choices there are Alan Pardew, Sam Allardyce, Tony Pulis, and Roy Hodgson.
Yeah, you know, the only person with a big enough ego to talk about good football would be Alan Pardew. I'm going to go with Pardew for sure.
You're going with Pardew?
I'll go with Roy.
Nick is 2-0 up. It was Roy.
He
Hodgson.
Talks about good football. If you ever laugh,
I've just nailed the reason I chose that quote was specifically
exactly.
You.
Oh my gosh! I have to tell you, Chris, you're doing a great job. You are throwing out these red herrings every time. You got me every time.
Well, uncharacteristically, I did a huge amount of preparation for the show, and I really did think about this one. Yeah. So. Quote number six, it's the penultimate quotation. So you can come back and draw, Patrick. But Nick is currently 2-0 up. So the quote is this, and it's an interesting one. I don't like people who drain my time and energy. If you've seen the Harry Potter films, we use the term dementors, people who can draw the life out of you in terms of your energy. So we eradicate the dementors, encourage the positive people, and that spreads around to create the team spirit that we have here. And that came from either Ian Holloway, Alan Pardew, Sam Allardyce, or Tony Pulis.
I think that's got to be Ian Holloway.
Yeah, it's not Pulis, it doesn't read Harry Potter. So, no chance.
How do you know?
No. I'm going to pick Holloway too, so I'll go with you. Allardyce was the first choice, right? Sam Allardyce was the first choice?
You got Pardew, Allardyce, or Pulis if you're not taking Holloway.
Allardyce.
Well, there we go. We know who's going to win because that is wrong for both of you. That was Alan Pardew.
He's read Harry Potter. Wow, I didn't know a guy could even read.
I suspect at best. Yeah, I was going to say, I suspect at best. Right,
we watched the movie
or the films. Yeah.
So,
In fact, he does say films. It was in the quote. Did I say
then
films,
that makes
it?
More sense. He can't read for anything. Anyway, never mind. Well done, Nick. Congratulations.
There you go.
Thank you.
So the final one, we'll play it anyway since I wrote it down. So my gut feeling is this one is potentially a freebie because it gives you some context as well as you can just hear it coming out of the person's mouth. So the quote is this. One of the press guys told me this morning that on Delaney's Instagram, he'd agreed to sign a new contract. So somebody at the club will tell me eventually. Unfortunately, Damien can't tweet me, so no doubt he'll let me know. It's good news if it's true. And that came from either Neil Warnock, Frank de Boer, Sam Allardyce, or Tony Pulis.
I'm going to go with Acorn Winkle, Neil Warnock.
Okay, Patrick.
Could you talk about tweeting? Pulis. I'll go with Tony Pulis.
Well, it was 3-0. There you go. Warnock it was. Devastating considering you revised, Patrick. Absolutely devastating.
You revised?
Right. So interest of fair play. So the game's idea to do a game was Chris's idea, so everyone knows that. But I came up with the idea for the game thinking that I'm so bad at games, I'll do a game that I can actually do some research on. So I actually went online, looked up quotes, and it helped me not at all. But I'm not a sore loser. Nick, great job, Chris. Thanks, great hosting.
Who said this? Anyway, we must talk, just before we end the show, very, very quickly about the protests at the game against VAR. So I'll get some opinions from you both. And I'm not really talking about VAR in general here. We've all had our opinions that we've said on the show or on social media or whatever, and you know, I think we'll be repeating ourselves a bit. But the fact that, well, particularly the HF, but you know, fans up and down the country have now organised themselves to a point of protest, I think is something worth discussing. I'll hold my views for the time being. And Nick, I know it's a subject you're passionate about. What do you think about the protests?
Well, I must say that I've been against it from the beginning. I feel vindicated. The HF are getting a bit of stick because some Palace fans were actually singing for VAR when the red card was looked at. And actually, that was VAR being used properly, but I don't see why the fourth official couldn't have seen that as he was so close to it. I think that it's taking responsibility away from the refs and the linesmen. They should be the ones in charge of the game, not somebody in Stockley. But the fact that the HF held up the banner that said FVAR or whatever it was, even when the VAR was going on for the violent conduct, and they were singing FVAR while that was going on, just shows what everybody thinks. It's taking the game away from the pitch, and somebody further up the line is going to make mistakes rather than the ref. And get rid, even if we benefit, get rid.
My viewpoint is that I respect the right to people to protest, absolutely. And what they did over here, or that they did in the broadcast, is they made sure that they showed that banner and spoke about the VAR comments during the match yesterday to kind of point it out. Unlike Nick, I don't have a bigger problem with VAR. I think it has to be in the game because every other major sport has a video refereeing. The issue I have with it is the thing that is the IFAB thing. The rules are messed up. The offside rules are jokes, so is the handball rule. They have to be changed. And unfortunately, Mark Clattenburg was on NBCSN this weekend. He's been talking the entire time. And the idiot has a good point on VAR, which again is that you have to change the rules. They have to look at the rules and they have to be rewritten. Once they're rewritten and they have to also take certain things out of VAR, I think it's going to work. But I'm not shocked that people don't like it because it has been utilized or not implemented really poorly by the Premier League. No other league does it the way they do it. And once they figure that out, I think it'll be much better. But I get why people are upset. I'm not one of them, but I get why people are upset about it.
There are inconsistencies with what seemed to be very, very similar incidents. I know there was a Liverpool player that possibly could have gone off yesterday for a similar tackle that Aubameyang did yesterday. And the only way you're going to get rid of that is either have one ref, only one ref, and the teams fit around when he's available, and one VAR person, because you get different people. You are going to get the inconsistencies, which you can't account for, no matter how hard you try.
Well, look, that's really a point that's been massively misunderstood, and it's good that you bring it up, because I think, first of all, with anything like this, you have to set the right expectations. I won't try not to bore you too much, but it's an exercise in incredibly poor change management, and something I know an awful lot about from my day job. It is, in terms of how to implement change and what the general reaction is going to be and how you can mitigate that in advance and all that kind of stuff. And the main message that you have to ensure is that you are setting a proper expectation for the change that you're going to make. And everyone seems to have this perception that VAR is there to make certain decisions. And I include the people who are implementing it in that, which is idiotic, because you aren't talking about certainties. You're still talking about human beings interpreting information. So you will get inconsistencies, as Nick said. You will get incorrect calls. It will still be exactly the same. So immediately people are saying, well, what's the point of it if you're still going to have mistakes? Well, if you set the expectation right in the first place of, hang on a sec, you know, guys, bear in mind that when we're talking about getting more right decisions, not every decision right. I think that would have helped a great deal, but they didn't do that. I think the technology has been misunderstood by those implementing it, particularly around the offside rule, because, you know, they don't even seem to have done the basic research of, you know, the sort of frame rate and whether or not they can accurately measure offside to the millimetre, because they can't. I think that's been demonstrated a number of times, that the actual, you know, instance of where a player becomes offside is between the frames that are being looked at. So that in itself makes it absolutely idiotic as well. So you want to a loser straight away. And all the, you know, as you've said in our chat there, you know, clear and obvious error is where it was sold. But I think, you know, that hasn't counted for what they consider to be the key decisions. The clear and obvious error is the referee overruling in a key situation. But You know, for things like offside, it's been sold as the perfect tool that will tell you categorically whether someone's offside or not. And it doesn't do that. So if you don't tell people it does that and you don't treat it like it does that, then it can be a hell of a lot easier to implement it. You know, similarly, I think, you know, the other fact of you know, it not really, it's not for the fans, is it? You know, the way it, certainly the way it is now.
No.
You know, I kind of batted this away initially because I thought it would get easier. And my opinion was that, okay, it would just change how you celebrate a goal. And sometimes you'll get two celebrations and sometimes each team will get a celebration each in the event of a goal. But, you know, that hasn't really worked out. Whether that would change over time and people adjust, I'm not so sure. But I totally get why people say it doesn't feel like football anymore. You know, and I've, as soon as I started personally to experience that doubt of whether or not I should be happy that we've scored a goal immediately or whether I should react later on, you know, that started to lose for me as well. So, you know, I go back to minimizing its use. That's where I still feel it has to come in for, you know, serious injustices. And we've seen many of those as Palace fans, and, you know, every football fan up and down the country will say the same thing. There's been tremendous injustices that should and could be righted with a couple of minute check here and there. I think anything, you know, there should almost be a time limit where, you know, the guy monitoring VAR has 30 seconds to say whether or not it's right or wrong. And if he can't do that, he goes with the on-field call. Similarly, that, as I talked about before, the referral system that's used elsewhere, I think, you know, if you limit the number of referrals, that could also be worthwhile. You know, I feel there's a place for technology, but I don't feel strongly as I did on that. And you know, certainly not with the way it's been implemented at the moment. So we'll see what happens. Final word on that, Nick?
Yeah, much as I hate it and said I've hated it, I didn't mind it too much last week when the ref went and actually looked himself. So people in Stockley Park, if they say to the ref, you might want to have another look at that, that's fair enough. Everything is still contained within the ground. I'm making hand gestures within the ground. It's when it's extraneous to the actual events going on in the location where you are. You know, the ref, if he could put his hands up, yeah, I got that wrong. So if the ref looked every time and made his own mind up as to whether he'd made a mistake, yes, I'd like that a bit more. But it's taking away the ref's kind of control over the game, really. You know, are they thinking, oh, well, yeah, I won't make a call there because VAR will sort it out. So it's actually diminishing the responsibility of the refs, and that's not a good thing.
Yeah, I think it just goes back as an overall finishing point on this. It goes back to, you know, let's accept human error to a point, right? And that's where the discussion needs to be for me. Where are we accepting that human error? If we're accepting it on the field of play, as we always did, fine, we'll accept it. But, you know, if we accept also human error within the technology itself, I think that will make things a fair bit easier too. But where it is at the moment, it's just not being used right. The handball rule is stupid. The offside rule is stupid. And those are the things that really need to be addressed. So, well, thank you very much indeed for listening. Hopefully you've enjoyed our first show back for 2020. Thank you, obviously, to Mikey for producing, Nick and Patrick for joining me. Plenty more coming from us over this week and the coming weeks, of course. So first up, I think, will be the Love Sports Show, which is now Wednesdays 8 to 9. And a new host there, Miles Blumson, who's done a cracking job on the first show. And Nick, still, it's a lot of fun, isn't it, the Love Sports Show still?
Yeah, I love actually being in a studio and recording and seeing the ex-footballers coming in and out. And, it's a chance for listeners to actually call in. So if you do listen, please phone up so we can have a little bit more interaction. That would be great.
Absolutely right. And following Love Sport, obviously the preview show will be back to talk about the City game ahead, which will be a big challenge for the team. But as I say, plenty more from us to come as well. Anyway, so that'll do. Thank you very much indeed, and speak to you again soon. Cheers. Bye.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.